Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, A Cigar Box and a Promise, was written by Johanna Johnston and is the last in this series of programs of dreamers and builders of our world today.
It just wasn't the kind of story I'm used to, you know. I'm used to the other kind. Every reporter is. Crime, graft, delinquency, trouble. And all that sort of thing I can take in my stride. That I can understand. But this floored me. Two men. Two brothers. Steel men, actually. Standing at the center of something they call Operation Crossroads.
Thank you, Mr. Most. Thank you, Mr. Garrison, for helping me learn to walk.
She's a little bit of a thing, all starchy dress and big smile. Crippled in an auto accident when she was only three. Now, at Operation Crossroads, she's learned to walk again, even to run. And there are dozens of other kids, grown-ups too, crippled by other kinds of accidents or disease, or born handicapped, all being helped. And then there are all those youngsters I never dreamed there could be so many. Born into silence.
Thank you, Mr. Garrison. Thank you, Mr. Moe, for helping me learn to talk.
Operation Crossroads. Outside, it's a big, new, handsome building, all red brick and marble and glass, on a quiet, shady street with comfortable frame houses all around. You can see that a lot of care has gone into it. But then you go inside.
Would you like a tour of the building? I'd be more than happy. Mr. Mose and Mr. Garrison are always glad to have people see the work that's going on here. But it may take a little time. There are the speech therapy rooms, the nurseries, the classrooms for the cerebral palsy children, the physical therapy rooms, the dental clinic. Oh, excuse me just a moment. I just want to help that young man to the elevator. He's much better than he was, but still, I'll be right back.
Well, I took the tour, and that was when I really began to feel staggered. Two brothers, steel men, you understand, working businessmen, were responsible for all this. Equipment that positively glittered. All of it the latest, the finest obtainable. Three floors of it. And everywhere, the teachers, the therapists, the trained instructors helping the kids, the grown-ups. Make the most of it. The young lady who was my guide smiled a little.
Yes, I know. A lot of people are pretty overwhelmed by it all. It is impressive. One of the finest rehabilitation centers anywhere. Not just in the South. And, of course, you haven't seen the other building yet. The one out back that fronts on Vine Street. That's the memorial building, where there are all sorts of offices and auditoriums and meeting rooms that various charitable and civic organizations can use free. Oh, and the library's there, too.
They built that, too?
Oh, yes. And equipped it and maintain it for the use of the community.
And here at the center, treatment is given free?
To anyone who needs it and can't pay. There is a sliding scale of fees for those who can.
But all this, well, this must have cost a fortune.
And they're putting more into it all the time.
I just don't get it. I don't understand. They've got a very successful steel business, granted, but they must pour all their profits into this and then some. Why?
They like to help others, that's all.
But on such a scale? Well, this is a sort of setup a city would be proud to finance.
Well, as I said, more and more the community is beginning to share in the work.
But they began it. They established it, they maintain and operate it, they are ultimately responsible.
That's right.
How come? I mean, whatever got them started on such a fantastic venture.
Why don't you talk to them yourself and ask? Or talk to Mr. Garrison. He's the one who does most of the talking for the two of them. He'll be here at the center sometime soon. He and Mr. Moe stop in every day. Talk to Mr. Garrison. Then you'll see.
Siskin is their last name. Did I mention that before? Moe's and Garrison Siskin, and they live in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where they own and operate the Siskin Steel and Supply Company. Garrison Siskin, it turned out, is a friendly, sturdy guy in his 50s with a nice, quick, down-to-earth way of talking.
Seen it all? Good. Say, you see little Kathy up in the cerebral palsy nursery? They point her out. Isn't she a doll? A year ago, she couldn't move her arms at all. Now she's making great pictures with finger paint.
Yes, I think I did see her. Mr. Siskin, what I'd like to know is what got you and your brothers started on such an undertaking as this?
What started us? Heck, fella, if you want to know what really started us, I suppose you'd have to go way, way back. Back to an old cigar box.
An old cigar box?
Yeah, the Pushka.
Oh.
And that was how Mose and I knew it, what Mom and Dad called it. Well, that Pushka was a part of life as far back as I can remember. Want to hear about the Pushka?
Sure, I wanted to hear about the Pushka. So Garrison Siskin told me. Well, it seems things hadn't always been so well with the Siskins. A matter of fact, when Robert Siskin, the father of the family, first came to Chattanooga around the turn of the century, he was a pack peddler. Later, he went to work for a junk dealer. It didn't make for much money in the house. To raise Moshe and Gershon, that's what they were called then, and their little sister. Still.
For the rent?
So. And one, two, four, five, seven, eight, $2 for food. Will it be enough, Anna?
Well, Robert, we will make it do. But isn't there anything at all to put aside toward new shoes for the boys?
New shoes?
Well, just for Gershon, then. He's a falling to pieces.
Look, Anna, after the money for rent and food, $2 half and one quarter left over. There's the gas to pay.
But I see $2 half and two quarters.
Two? Oh, that other quarter's for the Pushka.
Oh, the Pushka. Well, maybe next week, then, we can set something aside.
Or we could forget the Pushka this week.
Forget the Pushka? Robert, what are you thinking of?
If the boys need shoes, they work hard every day after school, like little soldiers.
Oh, yes, I know, but the Pushka is almost empty as it is. Suppose someone should come to the door in real need. Well, Gershon can manage a little longer. Put the quarter where it belongs, Robert, in the Pushka.
The Pushka is the good deeds box, and poor as the Siskins were, some part of their income always went into it, to give to others who were needier. As I said in the beginning, I'm a reporter. I'm used to stories of crime, trouble, and delinquency. And I've interviewed enough people in trouble to know how one false step can lead almost automatically to the next one and the next. But one right step? Could a good deeds box they knew in their childhood really have been all that set Mose and Garrison Siskin off on such an extensive course of philanthropy?
Well, no. I wouldn't say that was the whole story, no. I just meant Mom and Dad brought us up with the idea we were supposed to help others whenever we possibly could. I remember at school, sharing the one piece of bread I'd brought for lunch with some real poor kid. So, naturally, when things got a little better, well, naturally, we gave a little more. But still, that's not all the story behind Operation Crossroads. No, there's more.
Well, I went to work to get the rest of the story. I heard how when Mose and Garrison were still youngsters, their father went into the junk business himself with a capital of $6. And when Garrison was graduated from high school and won a scholarship to a university up north, there wasn't enough money for his train fare. I heard how both Mose and Garrison went to work in their father's junkyard then. And then, sometime in the 20s, there was the accident to Robert Siskin's leg. An accident that led to infection, which led to an amputation. An amputation that didn't help. Suddenly, Robert Siskin was dead. After that, his two sons sat in the little shed at the yard and faced the future.
Well, Mose, we've worked side by side in the yard for quite a while now. Together, I guess we'll manage.
Yeah. Just one thing, Garrison.
Yes, what's that, Mose?
You know, as well as I do, I'm not much good at paperwork, orders, bills, that stuff. Not much good talking to customers either. I'm okay out in the yard. But the inside stuff, You've got to take over in here.
Well, all right, Mose, if that's how you want it. I'll take on the inside stuff. You're in charge outside. But 50-50 all the way, okay?
Okay.
All right, if I'm Mr. Inside, I better get at these invoices.
And Mr. Outside, I better get out there.
Oh, well, wait a minute. Look here, what I brought from home.
The pushcart.
Yeah. I got a new box for Mom at home. I thought it'd be nice to have the old one here.
Sure. There's always some down and outer wandering by.
It'd be handy. We can both put in cash whenever we have any. Both take out whenever we see some reason. No need to account for it. It'll just be here when needed.
Good.
Dad might like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, but maybe it'll bring us some of the kind of luck we need, too. Okay, back to work.
Well, whether the pushka had anything to do with it or not, gradually things did start to go better with the Siskin brothers. Mr. Outside and Mr. Inside working together made quite a team. Things got comfortable enough, so first one, then the other, got married, began to raise families. Things got better and better. The Siskin Junkyard became the Siskin Steel and Supply Company, dealing with bigger and bigger companies all over the South. There was more and more money being put into the pushka. Bigger and bigger sums handed out. It was just part of life. And then in the 1940s...
Yes, it was then I had my accident. The accident to my leg. So much like Dad's accident. I was on a trip to New York. I'd gotten out of some station for a little stretch. Then when I was hurrying to get back on the train again, that steel grid they used to cover the train steps fell, smash against my leg. Well, I was pretty near knocked out. The porter got me on board somehow. He and the conductors tried first aid. But it was plain I was in bad trouble. At the next station, they got me off the train, rushed me to a hospital. And there's where the thing happened that really led to, well, Operation Crossroads and all the rest.
He told me what had happened. There were hours of x-rays and examinations and consultations. And all the while, his fever was going up. And then the doctor told him they would have to amputate his leg.
Like Dad. Just like Dad. And then, 2 days later, he was dead. Suppose I won't let you amputate, Doctor.
Won't let us?
You can't do it without my consent. I'm not giving it.
I'm afraid you're not quite aware of what you're saying, Mr. Siskin. Well, it's not surprising with that fever.
Now I know what I'm saying. I refuse my consent.
But I've tried to tell you, amputation is your only hope. There's a blood clot and infection.
There's no hope at all without it. Nothing that'll help.
You can pray.
All right, then. I'll pray.
And so Garrison Siskin told me, all through that long, terrible, feverish night, he prayed.
Dear God, no one can help me but you. Please help me. Help me. I promise. I promise. No. No. God, please. Help me now. When I can't help myself. And I promise, I'll spend the rest of my life helping others who can't help themselves. Help me. I promise. I promise.
In the morning, his fever had gone down. The doctors could hardly believe it. They watched him all that day and the next. and then they realized some kind of miracle had taken place. The clot had dissolved. The infection subsided. He would live. He would live. But nobody knew if he would ever walk again. Then Garrison Siskin told me how he went home to Chattanooga in a wheelchair and began to fight that battle. Exercises and more exercises. He was stubborn. He was determined.
Look, Mose, a step all by myself.
Hey, look out.
It's all right. I've got the chair now.
Now, see here, Garrison, should you be rushing it like this? Now, you could fall and be back where you were.
I'm going to learn to walk again, Mose. With God's help, I've made it this far. With his help, I'm going to make it all the way. And then...
Yeah? And then?
Then, with his help, I'm really going to start keeping that promise I made.
There it was. That promise he made. Like the promises a lot of us make when we're in trouble and then forget when things get better. Only he didn't forget it. Helping others out of the good deeds box had always been something he and Mose took for granted. But now...
Hi, boy. How you going today?
Mose, just the person I wanted to see. I just read a piece in the paper here. Some poor woman, her husband's dead, she has this little kid. Well, it's a terrible story, and I've got to do something. Get her some money so she can pay the rent and keep the kid. Will you help me get it to her?
Sure.
Doggone, I'm still not able to get around myself like I'd like to. Here. I've got 320s in this envelope, so... what I was thinking, if Janie is still out at the yard, you could get it to her and then drop her off at this address to leave the money. Hmm. Only be sure to tell her she's absolutely not to say where it came from, just from a friend. Is she out there, Mose?
Well, no... Matter of fact, she's not. But we can figure out some other way, Garrison.
Well, sure. Let's see, huh? Now, I was just so sure she'd be there.
A matter of fact, I sent her out to Hickson. A family I'd heard about out there. Father sick, whole family hungry. I put $100 in an envelope for him.
You put $100?
Oh, yeah. That promise you made, Garrison, I sort of figured I'm in on that, too. Just like you.
But, Mose, it was just my promise. My life was saved.
Yeah, I know, but still. We've always done everything 50-50. I'd like to be in on this, too.
Okay, Mose. Fine. But what I mean... Well, fine. All right, now let's see about how to get this help to the woman I read about.
In the months after that, Garrison Siskin did begin to get around better. He was walking normally within a year. What he didn't tell me was how many people all around Chattanooga suddenly found themselves with the help they needed, just when things looked blackest. Help that seemed to come out of nowhere. And it wasn't just with funds that Mose and Garrison helped.
You talked with the kid, Mose. What do you think?
Well, he's kind of jumpy.
Well, sure, 3 years in the penitentiary. But I think maybe there's some good stuff in him. If he just gets a chance somewhere to make good on his parole.
Okay. I say let's hire him. I can use him in the yard. You really think this old guy can sober up, Garrison? He's been drunk for 10 years now.
I think maybe he can sober up if he knows we're counting on him. He's doing some kind of a real job at last.
Well, okay. Let's hire him.
Once they'd really started looking out for people in trouble, there just wasn't any stopping. And then they saw other things. Steel ramps for the churches so people in wheelchairs could get in and out. Steel they could furnish for a youth center. Reconstruction for a school for retarded children they could expedite. And then somehow, once they got involved with building...
Mose, remember I told you right after I got back from the hospital how I had a sort of a vision that night. I thought it was the end. The vision of a little chapel?
Yeah, I remember.
Not too big or fancy, just a place where anybody could go in to pray. Any sect, no sect. I thought of it as a kind of a memorial to Mom and Dad, you know?
Yeah, I remember. Why don't we get started with that, Garrison?
was 1950 when the chapel was finished. Not too big, not too fancy. Just the way Garrison had wanted it. But somehow, building it, seeing how all kinds of people did use it, the two of them began to see how the city needed a place where all sorts of charitable groups would have a center for operations. So they built the Memorial Building, with all its offices and meeting rooms available, rent-free. Then, a while after that, Garrison got interested in a struggling little school for deaf children.
Listen, Mose, we've got to help that school. It's doing a great work for kids, just great. Kids that have never heard a sound, never known how to speak. You should see their faces when they first learn to say cat or dog. But the folks that are running it hardly have any equipment at all.
Well, let's see about getting them some.
As a matter of fact, the whole setup ought to be enlarged. They could almost use a whole building.
Mm-hmm.
A whole building. A really big, modern, well-equipped building. And that'd be a place where those poor youngsters with cerebral palsy could be treated, too.
Yeah?
Take a lot of money, Mose. More than we could possibly lay our hands on now after building the Memorial Building, you know. But just think what it would mean. Maybe we could get that land back at the Memorial on Oak Street to make the two buildings kind of a unit. Mose, we must find a way of doing it.
And that, Garrison Siskin told me, was the way the rehabilitation center in Chattanooga called Operation Crossroads came into being. You know, I've seen lots of examples of one false step leading to another and yet another, but it never occurred to me that it might work the other way, too.
Oh, and say, have you seen our Center for Handicapped Workers, Abilities Incorporated? We're just getting underway there, but once we got involved with the center, we began to realize there are a lot of disabled people with plenty of abilities, too.
Mr. Siskin, just one more question, if you don't mind. With all this activity, how do you and your brother have any time left for the steel business? It does help to make all the rest possible, doesn't it?
Oh, sure, but don't worry, we find time. We get up early, Mose and I. We're out the yard by 6 every morning. And don't forget, we've got lots of people helping us at the your rehabilitation center now, too. You know, it's a funny thing. Just get people started at something like that. Let them see a child they've helped start walking or talking, and there's no stopping them. And maybe that's all it is with Mose and me, too. Once we started, well, we just couldn't stop.
I looked at him, and he looked like a happy man. He didn't look like a man driven by uncontrollable forces. But maybe he is. Maybe the drive to do good, once it gets underway, started by a cigar box or a promise or whatever, can be just as strong as the drive to evil. Hey, I'm a reporter. What am I doing talking this way? It's just that I'm not used to this kind of a story. That's all. I wish I were.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Joel Geffen, the director of the Department of Community Education of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America and spiritual advisor of the National Federation of Jewish Men's Clubs. Dr. Geffen.
This moving story of the Siskin Brothers of Chattanooga is a fulfillment of the Talmudic teaching of the rabbis that tzedakah, charity, knows neither race nor creed. The cigar box or pushka, which is mentioned as the seed from which Operation Crossroads blossomed forth, occupied a very meaningful place in the home of the devout religious Jew for hundreds of years. Even dire poverty could not eliminate this means of expression from his daily life, because his belief was that he who gives tzedakah, charity, serves the Holy One daily and sanctifies his name. Garrison and Mose Siskin learned the lesson of the pushka from their pious father Robert and thus brought blessings manifold to all segments of the Chattanooga community. Theirs is not almsgiving. It is the bestowal of loving acts. In the ethics of the fathers, this is said to be superior in ethical quality and of greater value to mankind than almsgiving, because through this service, man alleviates the burdens of the afflicted and sweetens human relationships. If we are to avoid the calamity of an atomic holocaust, then men must learn to live together and to be concerned with one another's welfare. Our American democratic society has given us the key to the development of such an attitude. It has brought about the type of thinking and action which we have manifested by the aid which we have extended on all sides. A nation is as strong as its individuals. The cigar box or pushka example of thinking of others, the promise fulfilled when one is inspired by his love for his fellow men and the happiness which is derived therefrom, all are necessary ingredients which each individual person must acquire for himself if we are to be able to live happily together. Garrison and Mose Siskin possess these ingredients. The reporter in the story is able to say of Garrison, "I looked at him, and he looked like a happy man." It is well to ask ourselves, do we look like happy people? If we do, then we fulfill in our lives the words of our sages, that he who does tzedakah, charity, and justice, is as if he had filled the whole world with kindness.
Thank you, Dr. Geffen. Eternal Light drama today, A Cigar Box and a Promise by Johanna Johnston, was the last program in this Dreamers and Builders series. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Carl Weber as Garrison, Joe DeSantis as Mose, Patricia Wheel as the receptionist, Gilbert Mack as Robert Siskin, Bryna Rayburn as Anna, his wife, Joseph Bell as the doctor, with Ellen Hansen and Philip Visco. Mandel Kramer was the reporter. This is Howard Reed. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.